Hi, this is Josh San, and this is Uncommon.
This podcast is brought to you by Neural Media. Are you an entrepreneur or marketer who needs help making podcasts, video, or animation? Perhaps you don't have time to manage a freelancer or the budget to deal with an agency. Well, Neural Media can help you with simple and affordable content creation, saving you time and money by taking away the pain of producing that content. To learn more, head to neural.com/media. That's neural.com/media. Play around with our pricing or request a callback directly. Listeners to the show receive a special discount by using the promo code UNCOMMON. Welcome to another episode of Uncommon. My name is Jordan Michaelides and I'm your host. In this episode, I have for you Joshua San. Joshua is a photographer, storyteller, and entrepreneur who covers the world of lifestyle, celebrities, and film. Josh came to my attention actually via Melbourne I Love You, who we've had on the podcast. I feel like this was years ago. It might have been like a shot in the Grampians or somewhere around Mount Macedon, but it was sort of at that time he became my equal favorite photographer with North Borders and Seventh Era. And talking to him, you get a sense that he's more, there is more to his story than just travel and photography. So when I found out we had this mutual contact in Susie Jamal, I had to get him on the show to talk about this sort of stuff. We covered a lot in this episode, including Susie and Think Inc., getting into photography, his current camera kit, defining a style, why film and emo isn't dead, story is everything to being a photographer, and of course, learning from Ice Cube as well. If you like the episode, do leave us a written review. We're very thankful for that. Share with your friends, take a screenshot, post on Instagram, tagging @uncommon_show to watch the episode in full. We publish all episodes on YouTube. Just search Uncommon Show and you'll find it. Don't forget, of course, to like and subscribe if you're watching now. Show notes and all previous guests are at neural.com/podcast. With that being said, guys, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching if you're on YouTube. And I hope you all enjoy this conversation with Joshua San. Joshua San.
Hello, sir.
How are we?
Very good, man. How are you?
Like I was saying before, we were going through notes and whatnot, and Susie reckons she's done you a doozy. My honest assessment of it is, what is she doing to you? She's giving you hernias?
I think I gave myself a hernia. Okay. I don't know. Did she tell you much details about what happened?
She told me that the way that she's explaining in classic Susie fashion, she's like, oh, you know, like, he's a guy and, you know, he sometimes I need him to do guy things.
Yep. So
and he's big, and so he can lift stuff, and so this whole text thing. I was like, "What? Well, okay." And then she said that you did a hernia lifting something.
So no. So what happened was I was working full time at a flight center for a while.
Okay.
And when I was doing that, I was also doing all my tours, doing all my work, just not sleeping at all.
Okay.
Yeah. So which is a disaster. So before we left, we were doing the Steve Wozniak tour. And we're flying out to Brisbane. And I was like, sweet, I'll just do some sit-ups, go to this tour. Got there, helped him lift boxes, set up, went to bed. Had a dream that night that someone punched me in the stomach. Woke up and I tore a hernia in my sleep.
Really?
Yeah, it was so weird.
Is tearing a hernia extremely painful?
Well, yeah. So we had Sydney and Melbourne after that. And I was like, I don't want to say anything because I don't want to have to go home. I really wanted to do this tour because it was with obviously the guy that created Apple. You kind of don't want to go home for that. So I was like, yeah, sweet, I just won't say anything, but I'm shooting like crouched the whole time. Like, is that my intestine? Like, what's going on? Like, all good. Got home and then just went to the doctors and they were like, yeah, it's definitely a hernia. I was like, and sweet.
So what do they do with something like that? Do they have to surgically fix it or?
This one wasn't overly bad. So just over time it was all good. So yeah. It's fine now. You can't really see it. It's gone. But yeah, it was extremely painful.
Yeah. They don't look good. My mum has done a hernia before.
Yeah.
I don't think she had to have surgery though, but I've heard of people needing to have surgery.
Mum wasn't there. So that's why I could continue shooting, but I was just like this the whole time, just crouched and...
Yeah. The way I've heard it is it's sort of like feeling like you got a stabbing pain in that area.
It doesn't feel good. And it was kind of like it was a bit blue. So I was like, maybe I've torn it real bad, blah, blah. It went away like after a couple of weeks, but I did a trip to South Africa about I think it was probably 4 days after the tour. Uh-huh. We did a volunteer trip and we were doing some work there and filming and stuff like that. And they were like, oh, you should just climb Table Mountain. So I climbed with these guys who had never done hiking before with all their bags. And they were like, oh, we're getting a bit tired after about an hour. And I had to carry all their bags with a hernia. I'm like, man, I need a holiday after my holiday, dude. So, but it was all good. It was all fine.
How did you meet Susie?
Susie, so she runs a company called Think Inc.,
yeah,
which brings like intellectuals and speakers over to Australia. So I kind of started with them randomly when they started. I think it was like maybe 6 years ago,
yeah,
5 years ago.
It's a while ago.
A long time ago. And I was shooting a lot of concerts and artists and things like that. And they were like, oh, we need someone that shoots. And a friend of a friend knew somebody. And they were like, oh, we know this guy. And I came in. I was so nervous. It was, who was it? It was... Michio Kaku, Dr. Michio Kaku.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and I was watching all of his documentaries leading up to that. It was like a weird, not sure if you believe in law of attraction thing, but I was watching him heaps and I don't know, it's like, oh, you're shooting for Michio. And I was like, shaking. But yeah, so I met him that way and obviously I must have done something well and stayed working.
That's so funny because I remember, Michio Kaku, that was sort of the era, where he was really becoming quite prominent. I feel like that's when I bought his book. His books are amazing. Like, he's just a very, very good storyteller.
He is.
Very good storyteller.
Very engaging as well.
Do you think that was sort of the... Because that's one thing Susie wanted to know is, what was your favorite Think Inc. event? Was that probably the favorite one?
I don't know. It's hard. I think actually Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah.
Doing him twice. He was the first guy I was ever like... I don't get starstruck very easily. And I was sitting in a room with him talking about Game of Thrones. And I'm like, I don't actually know what's going on in life. You know, it was surreal. And I have a big telescope lens and I take photos of the moon and I'm showing him and he's like naming all these craters and stuff. I'm like, this guy's so cool. You know, so he was probably the highlight big time, you know, especially because he's just a nice dude. So
what does he think of Game of Thrones?
He was like, oh, who are you going for? I'm like, oh, Starks, man. He's like, everyone goes for Starks. You know, everyone's like, Stark. And I'm like, well, who else is there to go for? And I thought maybe I was doing the wrong thing. I was like, should I go for Lannisters? Like, what's going on? You know, but he was cool. He was pretty into it. He's like, make sure you set my alarm so we can watch it. So after the show, they pre-recorded it and they watched it after and stuff. So
really?
Yeah, he was really into it.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, he's a fascinating guy. I love watching him on Joe Rogan's podcast is awesome to watch. There's a funny clip though that someone's like edited on YouTube and it's sort of each time Joe Rogan gets annoyed at Neil deGrasse Tyson Neil deGrasse Tyson interrupting. Okay. And they've like edited it so that like it looks like Joe and Neil hate each other, which is fucking hilarious.
I haven't seen that.
Oh man, I'll have to link it to you after, but I love those edits. Like there's one Joe Rogan meets Rojogan. Have you seen that?
Nah.
It's like Joe's interviewing himself.
Okay.
And they hate each other.
Right. That'd be a good fight to watch, though. That'd be a good fight.
I noticed, actually, you shared that the Conor McGregor thing being beat up by Khabib ages ago, and it's got like a Simpsons.
I made that video.
You made that?
Yeah, I made that video. Because I was watching it and I was like, man, because I love Conor. Like, I like watching the fighting and stuff like that. But I'm like, he talks so much shit.
He does.
And Khabib just walked in and just like pummeled him, you know? And that guy's got big. So I worked with Khabib as well.
No shit.
Yeah,
I came over here.
Yeah, so I work with that company as well. And I remember meeting him and it's just like someone's energy. I'm like, this guy could beat up everyone in the room. Yeah. But he's so nice and gentle. So it took a lot for him to kind of eventually kind of flip like that, I guess. So
yeah, I think, look.
It did push his buttons a little bit.
It did. Conor McGregor's whole shtick is riling people up and that's what sells seats.
He kind of had it coming. I was like, yeah. I love you, kind of a bro.
Do you think he'll ever fight again?
I don't know. He'll definitely fight. I feel like he's got a bit of steam behind him that he's lost. Mm. So he might have to, you know, win a couple of smaller fights to get his, you know, his, what's the word? The confidence back.
Yeah.
Because you know? Fighting is all confidence as well. When you go in there, it's a mental game as much as a physical. So
it's also a bit like the age thing is very relevant when you're a fighter. Like I feel like he's about my age, like 29. Which is weird because if you look at him, he looks like a 35 to 40 year old man.
Mm.
A lot of these guys do. They look like fucking full on, like they've seen a lot.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. I don't actually know if he'll ever fight again.
Yeah,
I mean, he's made so much money. He's got other businesses on the side as well. His wife is very good at managing money. I've noticed. Yeah. She's in charge of everything.
Yeah, no, it always needs to be one.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm not
that guy either. My partner is big time.
We were talking before about photographer names.
Yes.
Tell us the story of how you came to Joshua Sun.
So that's my name. Joshua San is my photographer name. And I've also got Seawolf. So they're both like, I guess they're one and the same. But my photographer name was interesting because I took up photography years ago and I wasn't going to do anything with it. I was just like, I did it for a bit of fun. And there was a guy that was kind of mentoring me at the time. And he's like, you need to have a name so people know your work. And I was like, sweet. And he was like big on Japan and it was like his thing. You know, he used to travel there every year. And I was like, cool, man. You know, let's Google Joshua Scott photography. And there was probably like 500 Joshua Scotts. And I'm like, well, no, I don't know what to do. He's like, just think of something Josh-san, because he used to always call me Josh-san. I was like, well, we'll just do that as a joke. And then it kind of just stuck. And I put it on Facebook. Remember there was a time where you could change it on Facebook, but then you couldn't change it for a while?
Oh, your actual name?
My actual name on Facebook was, wow, is Joshua-san as well. Yeah. So I hadn't changed it for, I couldn't change it for ages because I'd like done my limit. So it's like, you can't change it now for like another month or something. So I just left it.
Facebook is fucking weird like that. We had this thing recently with our Facebook page. We had to change the name of the page to just be more focused on the podcast itself. And we had to change it bit by bit by bit. They wouldn't allow, like, they'd allow you to do one word at a time, which is fucking weird.
Because there's, so I do a bit of digital marketing out of here as well.
Yeah.
And we've had to change, like, business names. And, like, we want to keep our page, but we've changed the name completely. And they're just like, unless you can just send proof of name changes and all this sort of stuff, they're just like, because they just see it as somebody coming in and
jumping on that page.
Yeah, it's like, oh,
to
I'll
then
buy,
spam those people.
I'll buy your million liked page for, you know, 100 grand and then whatever.
100%.
You know, so.
Yeah,
it's pretty annoying though.
I like though how photographers have got this thing about getting a name. Like we had Seventh Era and North Borders, Liam and Mike on the show.
I saw those boys.
Yeah. And they, it's just funny how people come up with names. And, you know, we all sit there watching people on Instagram and think, oh, wow, that's such a well thought out name. Like it's such a smart name.
Yeah.
And then you speak to them like, yeah, like I was sort of called San, so Josh San.
He said it passingly. And my other one's Seawolf, so that's like my artist name as well.
Really?
Seawolf was the weirdest one. So I picked up my first like creative photography gig and after shooting, they're like, what name do we call you? And I was stumped. And I was hanging out with these boys at the time because we were young rap bag rappers and they had this group called Kokas, which is because they're all Mauritian.
Okay.
Kokas, whatever. And I was like, oh, I don't know. And I thought of the C from Kokas. And I just didn't know what to say. And I was like, oh, Sea Wolf. And they're like, cool. And I'm like, now I have to stick to that. And then it kind of stuck. And then that became my name as well. And it was like the most random. I thought of it on the spot at Flinders Street Station with like 2 seconds to think of it. I'd made it up on the spot. But it kind of stuck, which was cool. But
how did you get into photography?
I don't know. So I always did a lot of drawing and I am very visual with how I see things. So I guess for me, I was working in a factory doing like welding and stuff like that. It was like a real hardworking job and I just had nothing, no other outlets. And all my friends are musicians, like they're all rappers or they do whatever. And I tried and I'm real bad. So I would go and hang out with them. I felt like I had nothing to like bring to the table and I saved some money to travel. And then one night I was drinking with the guys and I'm like, I'm just going to buy something random. And I just bought a camera, bought that, tried it out for a bit and then it just kind of grew from there. So
what was the, do you remember?
It wasn't like
camera?
A passion thing. I didn't grow up with photography. Like, you know, there's so many stories. I'm like, that's so epic. Like my dad was a photographer and he passed down the camera. I'm like, I got bored and drunk and I bought a camera.
Well, the story with Liam and Mike was that they were skateboarding.
Yeah.
And they wanted to capture, you know, what they were doing.
Yeah.
And it was like, they bought some shit. I think they said they bought a flip phone or a flip camera or something like that.
Yeah, that was a thing, I think.
That was a real thing.
It kind of looked like a camera. It looked like a phone, but
it was
a camera.
Yeah. So I could hold it while you were skateboarding.
Going along. It was like the original GoPro almost.
Yeah.
So I did that because all my friends were like rappers. So I'd go into the studio and take photos and go home and didn't think anything would happen with it until one day this club that I was promoting at the time was like, oh, we have an artist coming in who's Coolio. And we need someone to take photos. And he's like, you have a camera, right? And I was like, oh, shit, okay, yeah, I'll do it. And I freaked out. And from there, just kind of like, oh, you took photos of Coolio. Do you want to take photos of this guy? I want to take photos of Ice Cube. And I was like, shit. And that's how it kind of became a job. So.
And that's why I was thinking, like, how do you, like, I'm looking at these people, like Tiger, the Mamba himself. There's a few others. And like Jaden Smith.
Yeah.
How does someone get there? But it's obvious that in osmosis, you're hanging out with these people.
Yeah.
This crew of people. And you're sort of in that domain, so to speak.
I think a lot of it, and it's like repetition reputation, just thought of that, copyright, repetition and reputation. So, because I was doing it for so long and I was in that scene and we're working in clubs and doing after parties and hang out with the guys that were doing concerts and, you know, and I was constantly just pushing to shoot, that eventually you kind of, you start breaking barriers to get into these places. So I started out taking photos of, like, you know, my sister in the backyard just to learn lighting, and you kind of, you know, you just move on from that. So
do you remember what that first camera was? Can you remember
that?
Yeah,
it was a Nikon. And I'm so not a Nikon guy. So it's a
not
Nikon.
Many people are.
Nah. I know. I heard the other boys were talking about it as well. It's a Nikon D7000. And I used to kit lens for everything.
The exact same one.
Really?
I'm pretty sure.
Shit.
Either there was a 7000 model or was there a 700
model?
There's
a 700 as well.
Okay, it may have been that.
Yeah, so it's a good starting camera, and it was good for, like, I guess, you know, the kit lens on it was fine, and it was fine to take in the club. And I shot on that for, even when I switched to Canon, I used to have it on my side as my little event camera because I kind of learnt on that. Huh. And then one day it just fell asleep on me, and I was like, you know, I think I used it for like 8 years. Even though I was Canon guy, I secretly had my little Nikon, like, that I'll take with me because it was like my old faithful. Like a good luck charm.
Sort
almost.
Of like wearing your, you know, like how some AFL and soccer players wear like their lucky underwear.
Basically, yeah. And it's like, it's time to change up the underwear every now and then. But yeah, I used to just have it hanging. I wouldn't even use it. I just have it there just in case, you know. So, yeah. But I'm rocking the Canon now.
I want to get into kit later. But I guess I'm curious, like, so you started out with this thing, you were in this sort of event space, and we can jump into sort of the business model, but it sounds like really you just perfected your craft over, like, how many years do you think you spent taking photos until you were getting consistent enough work that you could go out full time and do this?
Well, it's interesting because I think it comes in waves as well, because I think as an artist, you kind of, and a photographer and a business guy, you kind of redirect. So at the start, it was easy for me to make a good living because I just jumped into clubs. I started shooting clubs and events, and it's not hard to kind of jump into that scene because those sort of things, they need photos all the time. But to find work that I guess was kind of a bit more, there's longevity. Like, you don't want to be the 50-year-old guy shooting in a club. You know what I mean? So to get longevity, I kind of started, I think it was a good thing that I learned early of saying, hey, this is really good for now, but I also need to invest my time, energy, and my mental energy into what am I going to do next? You know, like, and you need to also find in that what inspires me so I don't get bored when I get there. You know, so for me, I was really inspired by travel, music. Music's always been my biggest inspiration. So even when people ask, you know, who's your biggest photography inspiration? I'm like, I don't really follow many photographers, as bad as that sounds. Like, I think it's all the musicians that I was following. They kind of like, yeah, this inspires me, this and that. And I'd kind of follow in that direction, which is why I think I've fallen into, I guess, tours and working with those artists.
Well, I think that's a good thing because then you don't define yourself so much as a photographer, but someone who has found this as a medium to tell stories, makes sense. And these are the stories that you like.
That's it. And that's
travel,
why...
Travel and music.
Travel, music, I mean...
Log cabins.
Log cabins is mad. And that was really rad. And that, again, that comes down to it. It's like, you know, I guess when people are looking to make something a career, it's like you got to judge, you know, what makes you feel like you're soaring, but what kind of power is that propeller? You know, like, you need money to kind of keep yourself going, but you also need to do something that's like you get excited to get up for in the morning. So.
Yeah. Like, I think there's that, not so much a saying, but a study that shows that if you're earning like $70,000 a year, any point after that, you're... Like, it will definitely solve problems for you, but the longevity and your happiness doesn't really increase much with
for
the money that increases.
And you're spending money on stuff you probably don't need.
Like, lifestyle creep starts to get in, if that makes sense, once you pass that sort of $70,000 mark. And I think having something that makes you really, really passionate is absolutely crucial.
And like, it's a powerful thing once you harness it as well, because if you're passionate about something and you get up early and you've got the energy for it and you actually vent it into something that can become a career, that's when everyone's like, I don't know how you do it. And you're like, I don't know how you don't, because it's like, there was days where I didn't sleep for like 4 days, like that tour, didn't sleep for days, you know? Yeah. And I just got back from this trip I was telling you, and I hadn't slept in a week, and then I had to go on tour again. It was just like,
yeah.
But you don't feel tired until afterwards, I think.
It's like when we were away in Japan and a friend was like to me, oh, like, you know, you should really like relax, because we were doing a few interviews while we're away. And I'm like, but this is sort of what I love to do. Like, we don't make any money directly from doing this, but it sort of just opens up doors and you get to meet people. And again, it's sort of a way of telling stories,
and you start to thrive, right?
It's like, you love it. I was loving the opportunity to interview people while we're away, because now you're sort of in this world locally in that place that you've just visited,
that's
I find.
100%, 100%. And I feel like for anybody that's, you know, it doesn't matter what you do. Like, I know people that are nurses and they come home and they're just so excited. My partner, she's a kindergarten teacher.
Oh, really?
And she comes home and she talks for 2 hours about the kids. And I'm like, that's the best thing ever, because she thrives on that, you know? That's what gets her up at 6 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
You know,
it's what allows her to wake up as opposed to, you know, continually snoozing the alarm
for sure,
and being late.
And I think that's the best thing ever. I think anybody that has found that thing that kind of, you know, just like, it doesn't matter, even if you're not getting paid yet, there's always ways to get paid.
There's always ways.
There's always a way to find out.
It's just, you got to find a way to manage it with your lifestyle.
That's it. Balance it. And I've heard of like the whole, oh, just do it even if you're not getting paid, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, but the biggest killer of like creativity is stress as well. So it's like, if you're not eating, you're not going to be super creative, man. So, you know, it's like, it's balancing that out as well. So
do you think, like you were talking before about your taking photos of your sister, and I was just thinking about your own childhood, is there any particular early memories that you still hold with you today, like stories that you'd like to tell people about your own childhood?
I don't know. I can't really think of anything. I was just an energetic kid.
Yeah.
I was a bit of a spaz, to be honest. Like, I would never really did any good in school except for science and sport and art, which is kind of weird because science is like the speakers that I work with. It's like kind of the scientists, you know. But I guess, yeah, it was like I think as a young kid, I was just super energetic. You know, I didn't really do too much. I did a bit of acting, did a bit of whatever. I think I was on a game show when I was 18. I was like the youngest contestant in Australia on a game show.
What was the game show?
It's 1 vs 100 with Eddie Maguire.
Really?
Yeah. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
How old were you?
I was 18 and 1 month. I applied just as I turned 18.
I've got a, do you have like footage of this at all?
I do. I don't, bro, I had a huge afro. Like, I've got really curly hair and it was down here. So I have got footage I can show you, but I'm super embarrassed. I'm not going to lie. But
I
was
would
good.
Love to see that.
That's it. And look, it worked for me at the time because I was a bit of a, you know, I liked being extrovert and getting out there a bit more and things like that at the time. But that's probably the only thing I can really remember.
Do you, with your career, we were speaking before about your first camera, sort of using that Nikon as sort of your lucky underwear. What does your kit look like today?
I'm currently using, so I had another Old Faithful camera, which was a Canon 5D.
Okay.
It was a Mark III, and I refused to get rid of it.
It's a nice camera.
It's a nice camera.
Yeah.
And I refused to get rid of it. And then I just got off the Kobe event, and I went to shoot an event straight after because I wasn't sleeping again. And as soon as I got there, the camera fizzed. So I've picked up it just died. They do it all the time, man. I think it's like a couple thousand, like maybe 20,000 photos, they eventually, you can get them fixed, but I've picked up a, I think
so it's better
a
60. To just get a new one.
Just get a new one. And it's sometimes it's time, you know? So I've picked up a 6D that I'm using now. The 70 to 200 is always for concerts and things like that. Especially with my style of photography, I really like photos of people. And I think that sort of lens really, it brings a lot of focus onto a subject. It's not great for landscapes and things like that because obviously it's real tight.
It's too zoomed, yeah.
But, you know, if I'm shooting, so I did some work with Vogue UK, shot some brands for that, and I was like freaking out because I don't usually do fashion. And I was like, how do I make this girl look amazing, you know? So I got this camera, got the city in the background, and just like making her the focal point, and you can just see everything moving around her, but blurred, it was pretty beautiful. So I smash that lens a lot. I use it heaps. So
this is a key thing that I learned, and this is why I love Liam and Mike, is they've taught me a lot about this stuff when it comes to photography. Because we're wanting to do more video stuff, and we've been sussing out a camera rig. We actually just bought, you can see it on the desk there, the Movi cinematic robot with the Rode VideoMic Pro. I actually use the new 11 Pro with that as sort of a stopgap before we get the Sony A7.
Yep.
But we were talking about all this stuff. And what I learned is that it's all about the glass.
It is.
And not many people realize it. Like, granted, you need a camera with a good lens, a good sensor, right?
Sure.
And it's got to be able to work well and do certain things that are standard for professionals. Like,
you don't want a crop sensor.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you need something where, like with video, you need different... I'd call it settings for the lay audience for different color grading and whatnot,
sure.
Which is really, really important. And I just didn't realize, one, how important different lenses were, and two, how fucking expensive expensive that shit can be.
The money's in the lenses, man. It's like, all in if the glass. I was going to invest in something years ago, it would be the lenses. Yeah. Like, if I was going to, you know, put my money into it, that's where the money is at. And there's so many like lens hire places that come up now, and you know they're making a killing because they'll just buy the lenses outright, and they know that people can't afford them, so they just go in and I'll hire this lens this week and this one that, you know. And that's how I did it at the start.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't afford it because I was like doing the struggling artist life, and I moved when I started photography. I just did cafes, so I was a barista, and then with that money, I'd be like, sweet, I can afford to hire this lens this week, and I'd go and hire it and use it, and then, you know, you just put it into your quote. So anyone that's like trying to shoot and they're like, well, I can't afford the lens, it's like, just
go hire.
Just go hire. You can hire it for a day, and then you make your photos look 11 out of 10, and then, you know, you can probably afford it after a few shoots. So
what are the, so you mentioned before 7 to 200, which is a very, like, very, like the standard lens would be like a, your kit lens is like 20 or 30 to sort of 70, right?
Yeah, that's it.
That's sort of your standard.
There's a good lens that I use a bit, and I think the guys actually said they used it as well. It was like the 24 to, I use a 24 to 105.
Oh, wow, okay.
It's a 24 to 70 as well. So they're good. That's a perfect lens just to get stuff done. You know, I'll shoot events with that, and I'm sweet, you know. I don't usually use wide angles as much unless I'm shooting a house or a cabin.
Yeah.
But I haven't invested in one because I just haven't needed it that often.
Yeah, wide angles are a bit... I've noticed using this on the 11 Pro, like, it almost starts to become a bit of a fisheye.
Yeah, and it kind of... I know a lot of photographers that use it religiously.
Yeah.
And if they're doing portraits or whatever and people's faces are drooping on the side, it pulls a bit too much for my
liking.
So.
In my opinion, and North is going to hate me saying this, it almost is a bit lazy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, as in, a wide angle lens is very forgiving, I find. Yeah. Because it allows you to, it's just the, for wide angle, I find that it just gives you the context of the scenario, which makes it a better photo.
And I mean, anything for, you know, again, going back to the cabins, right? So I'll shoot these log cabins, and which has somehow become part of my job as well, staying in log cabins and taking photos. It's cool, man.
I've noticed that. It's just like cool. log cabin.
Yeah, so it's a sick job. But with that, you want this house to look amazing, right? And the thing is, with a house, you don't want to feel claustrophobic, so you need to make the place look big. Even if it's not that big, as long as it looks big and you get there, it doesn't feel tight. But so for that, you need to have a kind of a wide angle for that, depending on where you're shooting,
the nature of where you are,
for the nature of that. But I mean, I guess the creative aspect of it, I wouldn't go with a wide angle. I feel like when you're trying to tell a story, I actually feel like finer detail on little things, like just say you're out and you're trying to take photos of a nice cafe, having just a big cafe, cool. You get a photo of someone sipping a coffee a certain way and it's like nicely zoomed in and there's a good, like, you know, blur on the background and foreground. It shows a bit more character. So that's, I think that for me is why I think towards my style, maybe it works a bit better not using wide angle.
Well, that's what I was thinking about is one of the key things is I feel like your style is quite distinct in that it's very, like I find that you're able to capture a story in a very tight frame reference, if that makes sense. Like I've noticed a lot of your photos, particularly with the ones that you take in like cityscapes like Japan, there's just a lot going on.
Yeah.
But it's such a small shot as well.
Yeah.
So I guess I was just curious as to how do you, like, do you define your style in any way to people when you tell them what you do? How do you sort of explain it?
I guess so. My work stuff and then my personal stuff, I feel, can be very different because I know the importance of that other stuff. But for my personal work, I like to pinpoint something in a photo, whereas if there's a million things going on, you're still looking at that focal point. Wow. So I shoot a lot of film, so 35 mil film. That's probably my main thing that I love. Like I think I just hit my 10,000th photo on film. Jesus. I think probably like a week ago. So I was like,
fuck, that must be expensive,
it's,
right?
It's so expensive. It's like a dollar a photo.
My Christ.
Now that I think about it, that's a fucking lot of money, right? So it's... Shit. Yeah. So yeah, I've only been shooting film for like 3 years. So that says a bit.
Only 3 years.
Yeah. So, but with that, I use a really nice prime. So I don't know if you know much about what a prime lens is.
I don't know. Oh, the prime lens is like a, it's like a static measurement. Yeah.
Right. So it doesn't, yeah, there's no zoom.
There's no zoom.
So I use a nice 50 mil prime.
Okay.
And it just, especially with film and the camera I'm shooting on, a Canon AE-1, it's like an unbelievable film camera.
Yeah.
It just focuses so nicely on a point that, so I'm like, when I went to Japan, I would see one guy walking in the crowd that I was like, this guy's interesting. And I love people watching, not in a creepy way, but it's like, what's their story? Like, this guy looks cool. You know, it's just, I see him coming and I'm like, I will just purposely focus on him in a in like a big walkway full of people, and it just comes up in the picture so nicely. And I think that for me is why I love photography, because I feel like you can paint a picture around a single person, and even though the world's moving so fast around them, you know. So
do you think that comes back to sort of your extroverted nature? That's really why you like focusing in on those sort of those little things?
I actually feel like, as I said to you earlier, this is my first podcast because I feel like photography turned me introverted.
Really?
Yeah. I actually feel like I'm fine in a social situation, but I really, really enjoy my alone time. And I feel like photography did that. So for me, when I see these people on there, like I'll put my headphones in for an hour a day and go for a photo walk alone, you know, and listen to music every day.
That's a brilliant practice.
I told you, I walked here from Brunswick East.
And that was your photo walk?
It was like an hour and a bit walk. I didn't take any photos. I just listened to podcasts.
Uh-huh.
Listen to yours, don't worry. It was yours. and I'll just listen to music and I'll take photos because I feel like watching things going on around you, you can find beauty in pretty much anything.
Yeah.
You know? Like I'll go to a cafe and you'll see a mug and you're like, that's great. You know, if you take a photo of that mug in a certain way, you can put that on somebody's wall. You know,
yeah.
I think you can, if you look for beauty in anything, you can find it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the reason like that inspired me in photography is like, it's almost a challenge, you know, it's almost like, what can you do with this to make it, you know, to please the eye, you know?
And it's a very, really interesting point that you mentioned about this photo walk aspect. Like I know though Liam and Mike do it as sort of a promo thing amongst their audience, but I think as a general principle and like I ask them about process, what's your process or creative process? And it sounds like for you, it's just getting out there.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is really valuable because people often sort of speak when they have questions or comments as if like they're stuck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I feel like just one, going for a walk every day is good for you.
Oh, mentally.
Just mentally, just physically, you. Everything.
Yeah.
Nothing bad has ever come from going for a walk.
For sure.
I don't think. Or nothing bad mentally.
Maybe a cramp or something.
Maybe something like that.
That's about it, right? So.
But I think doing that is a great way. Because I've been saying to myself, like, now we've got this camera and this camera rig. Like, how am I going to find the time to get it, you know, on top of everything else we do, how do we get more video footage and play around with that sort of stuff? And I just realized like, well, I'm trying to hit 10,000 steps a day anyway.
Yeah.
Just go for a walk.
That's it.
Purposefully with the camera.
Yeah, with intention. So like for me, there's days that I won't take my camera, but it's like, it's a good way to plan my day.
Yeah.
So I feel like I plan my day better and I strategize what I'm going to do next or what clients should I hit up or who should I contact about, you know, doing some work or what's my next step in my career. And I can honestly say it without any doubt, every big decision I've made has been on a walk. And I say
that, 100%.
I feel it. I just feel like I go for a walk. I'll put in some, you know, I listen to like composers and stuff like Otto for Arnold's, like this Icelandic composer.
Yeah.
He's like my favorite dude at the moment. So
how do you spell that guy's name?
He's Icelandic. It's Olafur.
Yeah.
And then Arnolds.
Okay.
He's a cool dude. He's a very cool dude.
Because I love that sort of Scandinavian sort of...
Like Sigur Rós?
Yeah, Sigur Rós.
Big Sigur Rós fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just walking with that is nuts.
Yeah, it's like... Yeah, so I made the decision to quit my full-time job listening to Sigur Rós. It was so weird. I was listening to, I think... Yeah, just like Hoppy Pola, whatever that song is.
Yeah.
And I was like really pumped from and I was like, oh, and I just went in and quit. It was so weird. And I don't even listen. I guess music in itself is helpful. But I mean, every decision you make, you got to have a clear mind for it, you know? And especially when you're planning your day, you got to be clear, you know?
Do you use Spotify?
Yes.
Okay. I'll have to see if you've got a decent playlist of cinematic.
I've got a playlist called Cabins and Adventures that I made that I'll link to you. It's got like probably 150, 200 songs.
Nice.
Yeah. So, and I play that with my headphones in when I go and shoot cabins.
Because I find that, cinematic sort of, it's not cinematic. I keep saying cinematic. But because I grew up like with a grandmother who sort of raised me in my early years just babysitting instead of going to childcare or whatever because it's cheaper.
You know?
And she loved classical music.
Yeah.
And I also liked electronic music in my teens. And so, finding bands like Cinematic Orchestra and Sigur Rós and stuff like that was very, I don't know what it was. It's something very powerful. Like, I'm not a massive fan of lyrics. Like, I like songs with lyrics, but I find that sort of music very emotional. Or
Arrival of Birds.
Yeah.
By the Cinematic Orchestra. One of my favorites. It's like in my top 10 songs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I 100% agree. And especially I feel like if you're doing something which can take a lot of time but doesn't take time to do. So, for photography, I can take 29 photos on my roll of film in 3 seconds if I need to. But it takes time to actually do a good job of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So something like listening to something like that, which is going to get you in a mind state that's kind of relaxed and open, and whether it be photography or again planning your day, or whether it be, you know, figuring if you're, you know, a musician, figuring out what to write, or you know, if it's important to have something that's going to get you in a state that isn't, what's the right choice of words, in a flow. Good flow state.
Flow state, yeah. Yeah. 100%.
So.
Yeah, that's I would agree with that. I feel like that music is the easiest thing to do that for me.
For sure.
Without a doubt.
And this dude, Oliver, he's got one of the coolest stories. I think that's how he's, I'm probably saying it like a bogan. but he was a drummer in a heavy metal band. And this really big heavy metal band in the country was like, we need someone that's going to be able to play piano for the intro to one of their songs. He's like, oh, I play a little bit. And he played. And then the song became famous and he was on the credits. So he's like, well, I'm just going to do something with this. And he just became a famous pianist.
Wow.
When he was a drummer in a heavy metal band. So it's such a weird contrast, but that's what got him famous, you know? So.
But yeah, that, I mean, for those sort of individuals, you see the talent in what they do. If they're able to pick up multiple instruments. Like I like, who was that Australian artist? Oh my God, I can't believe I blanked on this right now. I always blank. That's one thing I can't do in interviews yet is I always blank on names. I don't know why. Maybe it's the fact that I'm on the spot.
And I'm making eye contact with you. And you're like, damn, he's going
to... No, but there's Gautier. Is it Gautier?
Yeah, okay, yep.
Does that ring a bell?
It does a little bit.
I've got to look this up because it's I can't believe that he sort of went out of my field of music listening, if that makes sense. And he did an album. Yeah, it is Gautier. He did that album... So Eyes Wide Open, Heart's a Mess, Making Mirrors, 2011. Right. And the whole album was him playing just strange instruments.
That's cool.
Or sampling songs that used unique instruments. Like as an example, one song, he stopped in the middle somewhere between Sydney and Melbourne and there's a fence. No, it's an art piece. It was a musical fence.
Yep.
And he gets his drumsticks and he just plays like the bass sort of riff for this song and recorded it and sampled it. And that was part of the main part of the song. I love that sort of stuff.
That's sick. I know a lot of guys that like, I grew up with musicians and all my close friends are like musicians. And I lived with these guys for a while. They were the guys that kind of inspired me to take photos as well. These are the guys that, remember I said the guys, the Caucus guys, right? Yeah. They changed their name to Outside In and were part of a collective for like, 4 years or whatever, right? 5 years. We lived together in a warehouse. We all took separate corners of this warehouse and had a huge studio downstairs. It was nuts. It was a really cool creative time in my life. But I just remember sitting with these guys and I was like, it's so cool because this random dude would just like cling his, like, he was making tea and he clanged his spoon on it. He's like, that's cool. So then they got the field recorder and they recorded it and one of the other guys like made a noise and they made a full track out of it. And I was like,
oh my God.
How did you do that? Like,
that stuff's amazing.
That's what I mean, right? And then they turned into a track and they released a single with it. And I'm like, that's my spoon from my kitchen. I can hear the spoon, you know, it's nuts.
But back to the point of film.
Sorry.
No, because we were talking before about this film isn't dead hashtag reminds me of the emo isn't dead hashtag.
Because everything comes back.
Everything comes back. Nostalgia is king in this era at least. Bucket hats, Converse sneakers and
I saw
and
some flares the other day.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. Fucking hell. I'm not wearing flares.
Hipsters in the north side, man. They bring it all back.
They bring it all back.
Where did film... Like, why did you go, I really like the look of film or I'm really like... You know, you've just basically said yourself, you spent probably nearly $20,000 getting film produced over 3 years.
It's good. When you say it like that, I'm like, now I'm stressed. it was an interesting thing. So I bought a film camera pretty soon after I bought my first camera.
Okay.
But I bought it, I actually don't know. I actually don't remember my mindset behind having it. I remember just buying it and having it. And I think it was, again, I was probably working in this job and I had a bit of money and I was like, photography's fun. And I think at the time it cost me $150 for that lens on that camera with the flash in the box, right? So it was mint condition.
Wow.
$150 because film hadn't kind of done this shift back into the eyes of everybody yet. So it was super cheap for me. And I was like, cool, I'll just have it. And I put it in my cupboard. And I used it probably twice when I was living, I moved up north and I just took it some photos at a cafe and I never used it again. But I went to Japan and I was feeling very uninspired. Like I got to a point, I think everybody gets to it where they've been doing something for so long. They're just like, I don't feel as inspired anymore. I just moved to Brunswick East on my own. I was working and I was like, I was doing gigs and I was like, man, do I even like photography? Like, am I just doing it because it's now it's how I'm making money, you know? And I needed to find some other outlet. And I feel like every creative gets to that point. They're like, I've been doing this as my creative outlet for so long. It's not my outlet anymore. So what do I do, you know? And I just moved. So I was unpacking all my boxes and I found my film camera. And I just got back from Japan and I saw these guys shooting film. And I was like, that's really cool, you know? So I took it out, did some street photos, got the film back. I found a random developing place called Hillvale nearby, which is like a place in like a garage. It's like, it's a cool spot. It's right near me. So it was kind of weird how it was on my street. I was like, I'll just develop it here, you know? And I got it back and I was like, I'm really enjoying this again, you know? So and that was probably about 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. And then slowly it was like, when I wake up every morning and I'm like, do I pick up this camera or this camera? I just started picking up the film camera again. And I just felt like there was something behind it that was really inspiring.
I wonder what that is.
You know what it is? I can tell you what it is. I can tell you 100% what it is because I tell everybody this that wants to get into film. I was like, you have to take a moment before you shoot film. You have to take a moment. With digital, you hold your finger down, you take 100 and you edit the best one. With film, you're very deliberate. You're like, this. I see this and I want, this is a moment for me and I'm going to take it.
There's a positive sort of, what's the word? Like it's you're enforcing how many images you can take at once. So it forces you to
get the best image.
Get the best possible one.
The best out of it as well. And I feel like if I look through my hard drive at the start of when I was shooting, there's so many images that are cool that I never looked at again. Yeah. Whereas with my film one, I've taken a couple of minutes on each photo. When I get it back, I'm like, yeah, I love that, you know?
There's a bit of dopamine to it as well because you take it and it's like you don't know.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and do you often find that when you're taking film shots that you're sitting there and you're like, oh, this is such a good shot. I don't know if I've taken the right shot. You'll take multiples.
Man, I'll do it sometimes. I try not to now only because I'm like, if it's not the right shot, it's not meant to be. I'm very superstitious in that sense. I know it's like a weird thing to say, but I'll take it and I'm like, it's probably, if it's good, it's good. If it's not, there's photos that I thought this is going to be a banger. It's going to be amazing. And I'll get it back. And I'm like, that is trash. Like I just look at it. I'm like, I don't even know what I was thinking. Like the angling, everything was off. The coloring was bad. I'm like, cool. But there's photos that I'm just like, oh, I've got two photos left. That's cool. That's cool. And I'll get it back. And it's like, I'm going to get that printed. And you know, those photos, I remember getting out of the car once and, my mate was dropping me off in the city and he's like, hurry up, this car's behind me. And I got out and I just like, oh, and I took a photo of the city and just walked off. Didn't even remember I took it. And when I got it developed, I think that was one of my best selling prints that I had in probably that year. And I was like, I did it. Like I wasn't even thinking. So you never know, you know? So
what do you think makes, this is something I like to ask a lot of photographers. What do you think makes a good photo?
Story.
Okay.
I think you can take the cleanest, most perfect photo of something and it's like the boys were talking about vlogging. You can have the best video, but it's the story behind the vlog, which is important, right? It's the same with photography. I can take a photo of a guy and it tells a picture and it's overexposed and, you know, it's a bit off center, but someone looks at that and goes, wow, that's said something to me.
And I did notice on a lot of your captions, like, and some of the best photographers, they often have very long captions.
Yeah.
You know, like the classic hipsters will have like a one word.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we've all got these friends who've taken up film or photography or something like that, and they're just like, mood.
Yeah, I'm mood. Like,
what does that mean? What does that mean? Well, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And it's like a shot of a curtain.
Yeah. It's like, is it sunny? Like, are you closing the blinds because it's sunny? Like, what's going on? I try and mix it up a bit with my captions because I know that not many people read captions these days on Instagram and things like that, but I kind of want to have something for anyone that's interested to read it. And sometimes I do huge tangents and I just, you know, it could be just a picture of some lemons and I'll be like, it meant something to me because the day that I shot that, I remember shooting it and it was like a really good day for me and I'll just explain why, you know? And I feel like people like that sometimes. They like to have something behind it, you know? So
I like the captions. I feel like when I see a good photo and then I get a bit excited with the caption, like what's the deep story behind this?
For sure.
I
feel like we need to relearn how to read. I feel like so many people are so used to, especially...
That could just be me.
Just relearn how to read. No, well, I think it's a good thing. I do go out of my way to read captions on things that I feel like connect with me as well. Mm. You know, even if it takes 10 minutes to do it. You know?
Yeah, like I feel like the photo is sort of like the hook, but the caption itself is the real underlying story.
It's like, do you read the newspaper for the pictures? Like, you know, it's like... Yeah, it's a good point. You kind of want to know what's going on behind it as well, so...
With the business model, I mean, you've mentioned many things about who you work with, what you do. I guess I'm curious as to sort of what your day-to-day and week-to-week looks like at the moment.
So at the moment, like, so I'm doing a lot of work with, I've gone out of my way to find income streams in different fields. You know, I love food. As I said, I did cafes for a long time to keep myself running, and I love making coffee. Like, I'd made coffees for like 7 years. So for me, I would look for clients in the food industry. You know, I think there's especially at the moment with the boom in social media.
Yeah.
I find that if you're, again, I think this has been said 100 times, but I'm going to say it again. Like, if your business isn't online, then you're going to go out of business.
Yeah.
So there's a big demand for content. So for me, I look for work in the food industry a lot. I work with big, in a lot of events as well. So I work with big artists, but that's not every week. So to keep myself running, I'll be shooting a lot of that.
Okay.
And a lot of events, like there's small things, like just say there's a party on the weekend, and I'm kind of, because I grew up in the clubbing scene.
Yeah.
Not many people know that, but I did club work. I worked in clubs and managed clubs and ran clubs for like close to 9 years.
Really?
I'm 31. I'm an old man.
You're 31?
Yeah, bro. I'm an old dude. So I did that for a long time. So there's always something going on in Melbourne. So you can always find work in that as well. So,
okay.
But for me, my day-to-day in I think finding clients is always having a few things. Like I'm just fixing my website now again, yeah. Because we've got some other projects coming on that I want on there. So having your websites ready, having your portfolio ready, and just knowing how to approach people.
So you're doing events, you're doing work with brands.
Yeah.
You have little side things like the prints that you were mentioning before.
Do a bit of prints, yeah. I also do a bit of digital marketing as well. So
that's right.
That's probably one of my main incomes too. I feel like once you kind of get a grasp on how to market yourself, it's good to kind of make money on getting others to do the same thing. So one of the guys that was in that collective, The Outside In, we actually started a digital marketing company together.
Really?
Because he was getting all of his music out there and I was getting all my photos out there. I was like, hey, we're kind of good at this, right? So, you know, we'll make it a thing. So, man, I'll do a lot of that as well, which is killer. And you kind of sell your product through that. It's like, hey, like, I can help you with your online stuff. Better yet, this is what I do for a living. These are all the people I've worked with. I can make your stuff look good as well. So It's just, again, it goes back to it. It's like, you can be passionate about photography, but unless you can keep those wings flying and keep the propellers going, it's like, it's just going to slow down. So you need to make sure you've got an income coming in.
And the travel element, I think, is key
for, sure.
for you as well, or becoming more important. I mean, we were talking before this about Meteora and Dubai.
Such a good country.
And that recent campaign, I guess, that you did.
Yeah.
What's your plans there? What are you looking at when it comes to travel?
It's actually a really, really cool space to be working in. I feel like everyone wants to travel. And then once you're out there and you're doing it and you're experiencing it, like for me, I'm very visual again. So when I go to countries, I just want to shoot the whole time. So we organized this work with Travel Dubai. We were lucky enough to score it. And we spent a week in Dubai and a week in Greece. And it was just like, hey, we're paying you to go take photos and make us look good, you know? And it was a really interesting experience, you know, especially because I guess we get used to our own home base and what's good around us. So it kind of forces you to explore while you're there, you know? So
100%.
It forces you to kind of go out of your comfort zone and, you know, and be like, let's find what makes this place unique and show the world, you know? So we did that. We smashed it. And yeah, I mean, it's not saying it's very easy. You just got to be able to show that you can do it. And then reach out to people nonstop. You know, we put out like 100 emails to people before one or two pick it up. But if two people pick it up, that's two clients. Like,
exactly.
You know? And then after you do that a few times and your resume gets bigger, these people start coming to you because they're like, hey, you reached out to us earlier. We saw you worked with this, this, and this. We'd love to give you a chance.
Do you find, because one of the questions we have was around networking, right?
Yeah.
And I guess I was curious, and this is something that we've learned through our own agency as well. Like for a while we were doing cold selling and, it's a hard slog, but I noticed that networking was really where the opportunities started to come. And networking could be like just scale through people knowing about you and your photography or us and our podcast. And they sort of see that as a proof of work, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
Do you find that that is the best avenue for you to find new opportunities?
I feel like networking was probably my strongest asset at the start because my work was probably trash. Like I look at my Coolio photos and I'm like, they look like iPhone photos. Like they're bad, right? My Coolio photos were horrible. I had one usable one that I could use online, but I still got the job and it still got me to the next spot. And I feel like what people underrate and don't realize is that what you leave with somebody, doesn't matter if you can get anything from them at the time, is lasting. So I meet people and this guy runs whatever. He doesn't do anything that kind of affects my business at all. But if you're good to them and you give them the time of day, you don't know what they're going to be doing in 5 years or who they're going to recommend, you know? As long as you're a good person, and you're kind to people, they're going to remember you, right?
So comes back.
That's most of my the guys that got me the gig with Think Inc. were just like dudes that I was hanging out with, and I thought they were really cool guys, but I never thought I was going to get anything from them. And that ended up being one of my biggest gigs, you know?
Yeah.
So it literally, networking is, it's, I feel like people think of networking as being strategic about who you're friends with. And I feel like it's actually the best networking is done with being a good person to every person you meet, and the right opportunities come your way.
Yeah. And I think that people worry as well that when they're doing, like, they believe networking has to be the scalable thing. They have to go to like 10 different events or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's just you, the people you work with, how people engage with you on social media, I find in particular. And that, it generally comes back. Like, we've had clients, we've done like podcasts for clients, and then we've interviewed people as part of their podcast, and we've had clients come through that because they've just seen how, you know, you've worked through doing someone else's work, if that makes sense.
And even at the moment, I'm working with a big touring company who is, all these guys are friends of mine that I used to drink with years ago. And they're all like, let's just start a company. And they're the guys that did Kobe Bryant. They're the guys that have done all these sports and entertainers.
Yeah.
But originally, these are all mates, right? And it's like, who, you know, 55 photographers in Melbourne, and the one dude that was, you know, you're always good with and friends with, that's the guy you're going to go with.
What's the name of that company? I remember seeing
you. The Hour Group.
The Hour Group. Yeah. That's it.
They're all cool dudes, man. We're all like, we go out and get pizza and we're like, oh, we should talk about work now, right? Yeah, yeah, sweet. So they're cool guys to work with. And they're killing it at the moment. You know, they've done a really big year this year. So they're doing a lot of artists. They've done Tiger. We did, who else did we do this year? We did Khabib. Kobe Bryant was probably the big one. That was a really interesting few days.
Yeah.
And they're killing it this year. So
I remember seeing your sort of behind the scenes stories for, I feel like it was for Kobe. I just remember thinking like, fuck, Kobe Bryant's here. I completely forgot.
Yeah.
I mean, we pitched, that's one thing that we want to get with moving this studio to be spruced up a bit more, is being able to pitch those types with a bit more clout.
For sure.
Like, I feel like the sort of,
I'm pulling your mic.
Oh, really?
I was stepping on it. I was like, why is it getting tighter?
You know what happens sometimes is these chairs, they have, they've got like little wheels on them, and occasionally someone will get like it caught accidentally underneath that, and it will start to yank on it.
Well, I was like, why am I getting closer to this mic? I was like slowly pulling it with my leg.
You can basically eat the mic. I always tell people, eat the mic. I mean, you can move the mic closer to you as well. This is one thing I'm getting shit with Lauren for. Apologies, Lauren. But I love lounging back. It's way. Do you find it's more comfortable lounging back in these things?
I'm more comfortable. I don't know. Just like, I look like I'm not interested because I got my arms crossed, but I'm just like, just chilling.
You're comfier,
I'm way comfier like this.
Yeah.
Just like,
you could pull that thing closer to you, like way, way closer. It'll keep going.
Yeah, sweet. Just lounge back, man. Feels good.
I find that like as an interviewer, it's hard. Do I sit like this and like being all professional with my notes, or is it chilling out like that?
Yeah.
But I find like this allows people to open up more, and these things are fucking comfy.
Right.
In comparison.
But if it gets real tense, we'll sit forward like this and just, you know.
Yeah. So what does the future look like for you? What are you most excited about when you're going on these walks? You're thinking about the next year or two.
Trips.
What do you think is the most exciting thing?
That's a good question. I don't know. It's actually a good thing. I try and live as present as I can. And I'm pretty open to whatever comes next. Photography is always going to be my main thing. You know, I think I found myself in that more than anything. And I think for me, I feel anything that I do after this, like I'm doing a lot more tours now. I think the main goal at the moment is to probably do just working with people that inspire me. So the reason I get excited by working with celebrities and things like that is because these people are like the best in their field, right? There's something you can learn from everybody you meet with. Doesn't matter who it is, like some, you know, you can meet an old lady at the shops and she starts telling you about her life. And it's like, it's good to listen, right? Because everyone's got some sort of knowledge that they need to give. So for me, hanging out with somebody like, even if it's some celebrity, rapper, Tiger, or, you know, whoever, right? There's something that you can learn from everybody, right? So for me, I think it's less of a professional. I think the professional stuff comes naturally.
Yeah.
I think the thing for me in the next few years is to just learn as much as I can from people that are doing huge things.
And I think you've gotten to a point where I think any photographer who's doing the work that you're doing and is still finding passion in it, that you know, for the rest of your life, that is a good place to be.
That's it. And just for an example, you know, it's the thing that it's funny because people are like, what's, you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson like? And for me, it wasn't like, wow, he's really smart. I'm so glad I took photos of him, because we know that he's smart. It's like, what I didn't know is that he's so lovely and personal with everybody.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter. Some lady was doing his mic and he's like, so what's your name? So tell me about yourself. And I'm like, this guy is actually the same on and off camera, you know?
Yeah.
And for me, I learned from that. I was like, that's a great way to be, because it's made her day.
It's the things that you learn indirectly.
That's it.
That was one thing I was going to ask is lessons that you've learned indirectly from people. And it sounds like there's a bit of something from everyone.
I feel like, man, you know who the coolest dude was? Ice Cube.
Really?
I was backstage with Ice Cube and he was really nice. He's like, oh my, it was when Straight Outta Compton was coming out.
Oh, right. So this would have been like maybe 2 years ago, right? Two, 3 years?
It would have been maybe a few more.
Really?
It came out a few years ago, like maybe four years ago.
That was a great fucking film.
It was a good movie. Really fucking good movie. But his son was in it, right? Playing him.
Yeah.
So we had him and his son and I was backstage with him and he's like, can I get an orange juice? And we're having a really nice talk. And he's like, you know, I'm really proud of my son and whatever. And I was like, this guy's like you could see the one thing he wanted to talk about, he didn't care. It was like how proud he was of his son. And then he went on the mic and he's like, you know, I'm a gangster, I'm going to smash you. Like that's his alter ego, whatever. But I was like, man, this guy is like, doesn't matter what he's, you know, all of these personas that he's put on, like that's his character, but who he is as a person, he's like, he's genuinely a really good person.
And I think that's one thing you get meeting these people. Countless interviews we've done with those types, and most of the time they're pretty ordinary individuals. You know, everyone is just a person. The fact that you see them there on TV, on social media, wherever it may be,
yep,
they're quite normal.
Most of the time, they're amazing. You know what I mean? And I think that's what I learned the most from working with all these guys. It's like, you know, it doesn't matter what level you're at. If you're a good person, you know, that's all that matters, really.
You must get countless questions on social media, people asking you stuff about Kit, career, business, whatever it may be. What do you wish that people asked you? That they don't ask you?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. I don't know.
Maybe it's
a good question. I don't know. It's really interesting because I don't feel many people ask me.
What's the one thing that bugs you that people ask?
Okay, the one thing that bugs me is always, what camera should I get?
Yeah.
You know?
That is the...
Because it doesn't matter. It's the equivalent of saying, what brush should I buy to paint this picture? It's like, it doesn't matter because you're going to paint the same thing, really. I mean, there's obvious things that you need to go for, which you get in modern day cameras, you know? If you're looking for a certain look, I'll tell you what lenses to go for. You know, hey, you want to take portraits? Get a good prime. Hey, you want to... You know, get a wide angle. But if you're, hey, I need to get this type of camera, and you know, and what can I get under $400 that's going to do? I'm like, God. You know what I mean. So, I mean, that sort of stuff gets a bit annoying.
Yeah.
Well,
that's the biggest one. It sort of sounds like a procrastination question.
Yeah.
Or, just go fucking do something.
Or when they say, oh wow, your photos are great, you must have a great camera. It's like, okay, that's that one comes a lot as well. And you're like, and you're just going to be nuts. You're like, I use a good camera.
Yeah, we get lots of questions around. How would you start? That was actually how our business started, is people kept asking us, how would you start a podcast? And I just got sick of answering them. I said, look, we'll just do it for you.
Just do it.
Here's how much it is.
Yeah. Just set it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's surprisingly easy. You just got to fucking do something.
Right.
And you just got to go start.
That's all it is. Like, as I said, the camera I bought, I didn't even know the difference between Nikon and Canon. Like, I wasn't a photo enthusiast at all. And I bought a camera and then some guy was like, this is how you focus. And I was like, cool. And I just did it, you know? You just gotta put yourself out there. If you look at my first 3 years of photos and you look at my last 3 years of photos, huge difference. What's the main difference is the time and energy you put into in between.
Yeah.
And just doing whatever you want to do. You know, like I feel like people say, oh, I should shoot more like this person or more like that person. And for me, I think that trying to compare yourself to other photographers isn't always the best thing. I think that you'll find your unique style through just doing you. And that's why I don't follow many photographers. It's not that I don't like their work or whatever. It's like, it just doesn't inspire me, you know?
Feel like maybe it would cloud your judgment or process.
I need to be more like this. Like, for example, North Borders, man, that guy's unbelievable at photography, but it's not my style. And if I tried to do that, I wouldn't do a good job. Yeah. I could after a while, but my power's in my work, you know? You know, it's good to have your own unique thing. you know? And I feel like that's where people find their power. It's like, do you, you know? Like, I'm shooting cabins and I'm shooting rappers and I'm shooting, like, the Neil deGrasse Tyson on the same day I was shot for Lil Yachty. And I was like, this is so weird. Do you know who Lil Yachty is?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, this is a weird day. And I was like,
what a strange fucking day.
But, you know, it's, you got to put yourself into that, you know?
I think you highlight something very interesting is that process element. Like, we were talking before we're getting started about moving the studio around and moving away from sort of these sort of mics to shotgun mics. Mm. And, you know, I spent, I reckon, 4 hours yesterday on Cup Day learning the nuances between lav mics and shotgun mics and watching tests and reading the settings and specifics of every single one. And now I feel like I've got a good idea, but I know as soon as I buy it, I'm going to find all sorts of fucking issues.
Yeah.
And you just learn that stuff. It's just a matter of time. So you're just going to be there doing it, going through the motions and keeping up with the process, I think.
And look, it's good to have those things. You need to be able to upgrade and do new things. Yeah. But it's not the substance of your podcast. It's it's what you do in the podcast that's going to make you more successful. It's the same with photography. It's like you can go out with a crappy camera and take something that means something to you and then you just slowly build on that. As long as you find what you... the thing that you enjoy taking photos of, even if it's like I have, so whenever I have people in my inbox saying, hey, I need some advice on this, I always say yes. Like there was a stage where I was like mentoring, I think it was like 40 something photographers. Jesus. And I was getting anxiety, but I was like, you know, I'm trying to help them and stuff, but they come from different fields. Like one of the girls takes creative photos of women giving birth, right?
Wow.
And for me, it's like such a foreign thing for me, but I'm helping her. I'm like, hey, it doesn't matter. Like as long as you get this, this and this right, it's all good, you know? And then you got other photographers that want to take photos of fruit. It's like, yeah, man. And you just got to, that's their thing. And that's what gets them excited.
You should, this is interesting, right? This is something I was going to mention before is I feel like you'd have quite an interesting, like it's a lot of work, but to get into video, I wonder if you starting a vlog or capturing video of what you do on a weekly basis would be interesting.
Did somebody write that in to say that?
No. Okay. That was just my own thoughts.
Because I've got a few vlogger friends and I started a vlog and
you're thinking of Jamie. You think Jamie?
Yeah, Jamie dobbed me in because he was like, start a vlog. And I was like, But I started one. I did a couple of episodes. It was maybe not a bad idea. I just got to kind of...
I just got to, like, I think about it. Like, think of the people that you're shooting, the tours, the events, the little things, mentoring people, talking about that stuff. I wonder if you could save yourself some time by broadening the knowledge of you out there on YouTube by just covering what people are already asking.
Sure. I mean, yeah, that's probably the next step as well. Just documenting, you know, the information after that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm always happy to talk to however many people at the moment. I think I've got like 4 or 5 at the moment that I'm chatting to on a weekly basis, but I'm always happy to help as well. I feel like knowledge is something that should always be freely given. Doesn't matter. You know, I know that it's important for people to in schools and things like that, but if I can help this photographer or help there's even an artist or a musician who are like, hey, how do I creatively break through this to get to here and to find an income or to think outside the box to get there? I'm more than happy to do it always. So
when you think about social growth, and this is something I want to get into before we get into those rapid fire questions we normally ask people, sick, is, you know, there's this constant emphasis on stories, feeds, future growth on social. Is it Instagram? Is it TikTok, etc.?
TikTok's interesting, huh?
TikTok's interesting. We've been playing around with it. We've had videos where there's been like 40,000 views on it or whatever.
Far out.
And they're just like things that we're just playing around with and just getting used to. I feel like it's definitely sort of the future platform.
Definitely is. 100%.
Just because it's got elements that Instagram doesn't have and can't compete with unless they integrate it.
For sure.
And I think that main element is native discovery.
And I feel like it's still very raw.
Very raw.
It's not the best place to market yet,
no,
but it will be eventually.
It definitely will be. It's just a lot easier to get discovered because of the features of the platform. It's sort of the way I explain it, it's like Twitter meshed with Instagram. So the user interface is like Instagram, but the features of discovery are like Twitter.
For sure.
It's very hard to get discovered with stories on Instagram at the moment.
Oh, so hard. And it takes so much for you to get to that point. And then once you get there, it's like a swipe and it's like, and you're done. You know what I mean? People are so used to just, the swipe feature of Instagram is like a blessing and a curse.
TikTok definitely still has that, but it's got an element where it sort of entices you to look deeper into that person's profile because it's video first native and it's very easier to go through that profile, whereas Instagram, it seems a bit clunky in that regard.
For sure.
But I guess my question is, how have you seen your own personal growth on social media, and what really stands out as the key elements to that? Is it not caring about it? Is it focusing on very meaty captions that give an actual story? Or do you think that just sometimes if you're a photographer and you're decent enough that it's relatively easy to grow a following because that's the nature of Instagram?
Sure. I think it's knowing your intention when you go into Instagram as well. I feel, for example, if you're going on there to build an audience, you need to go on there and approach it a certain way. And there's ways that you need to do that. If you're going on there to sell a product, for example, just say I'm going on and I have, I've got friends that are great at it. So I'll just use one of them, for example. He just like, I'm just going to sell air fresheners, right? My friend Hal. And he made a killing out of it. Like he went in there, but he knows how to market online, right? Yeah. But I wouldn't necessarily use that for a personal Instagram as well. So I think it's knowing your intention on why you're on there. And as a photographer, for me, I didn't want to be known as... I don't know if anyone that goes onto my feed will see that I work with a lot of celebrities in my career. You know, I work with a lot. It was like my portfolio. I went through it the other day and I was like, I didn't even realize I worked with half these
ridiculous.
People. It's like stupid, right? But I don't really put much online. I'll put here and there, but I try and milestone my work on my experiences, right? I don't want to be too much known as Josh the photographer of celebrities, right? So I want it still to be personal, but I'm also not too personal, right? Where it intertwines with my personal life too much. You know, I don't like putting my face on there. It's a hard place to, and then it comes down to marketing. It's like, do you want to market yourself? And I think marketing is important. It's like, for example, my second biggest following on Instagram is actually in New York and then Japan and Berlin. And I was like, I don't think I've met anyone from Berlin, right? So, but how that worked was, is for me, when I was trying to push myself professionally, I started running ads. And I looked for places that had the biggest like film photography culture. And one of those was Berlin and one of them was Japan. And I just ran ads on my film photos. Nothing to do with my face or selling product or anything to do with, I guess, that side of it. I was just like, this is my work and this is where I'm going to market it. And it built a big following. And from there, I actually got clients from Berlin. Hey, can you do this? I want to buy your prints from here, blah, blah, blah. And it became an income coming that way. So
really? And that was through... I guess this is the handiness of that marketing skill, right?
Right, yeah.
So knowing the audience that you're marketing to and the intention of what you're going with.
You're selling, yeah.
Was this with your personal brand or the agency work that you were doing?
It's my personal.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so I just did that on my personal one, on my Seawolf account. And I was like, I'm just going to push it here. And I'll drop a couple $100 here and there or wherever I wanted to push it. Oh, this photo's great. You know, that there's one of like, I did some like wood... like some log cabin stuff. And I marketed that one and I just targeted Mount Dandenong. And then I also targeted Canada, right? Because they've got a big cabin culture there. And from there, I probably gained about a couple thousand followers, like straight off the bat.
Wow.
And people hitting me up to buy stuff. So it's like just knowing where you're going to put it, you know, and being strategic.
Yeah, it's something that I feel like we can get better at. I know that we've been redoing our website as well.
Yeah.
It should be done this... at least done for me this Friday. It's a bug test. That should be fun. But getting better at like inbound stuff. Like for so long, we were focused on outbound. And now I've realized that all the opportunities have come inbound and I really need to get better at that.
Yep.
And one of those things is promoting a personal profile and even the uncommon profile itself or the media profile, getting better at that because we've done fuck all.
For sure.
And I think that when... maybe once you get that sort of, that not profile, but the base of your portfolio, work, whatever, that you may feel more confident doing it. But I think that the getting out there to those audiences is key as well.
Yeah.
I've noticed that a lot of other brands that are sort of in the space of what we're doing have been growing quite a lot. And I've just, you know, we catch up and we chat to them. And one of the things they speak about is just getting it known and out there.
For sure.
You know,
it's, and it's it all comes with I think first impressions with your work as well. So when they see your stuff online, first impressions in general. I mean, it goes back to that whole when you meet somebody, blah blah blah. You know, it's but first impressions when people see you online and what you bring to the table. So whenever for my brand, I didn't want to be known as a celebrity photographer because you're only known for the people you're working with. You want to be known for the work that you're doing, like for your creative eye. You know. People who see me taking photos of Kobe Bryant aren't going to ask me to take photos of their house. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They might, just to say Kobe's photographer shot for my house. But the work, the actual work itself, it comes from different angles. So just selling what you are in general and just knowing the right avenues to push it, I guess, and where to push it, you know. And that worked well for me, I guess. And I can only go from my personal stuff, you know. I think I grew from the stage I started running ads, and they were not overly strategic in the sense of the content, but it was like, I love this photo and I want people to see my work. Mm-hmm. From the stage of that, I think it took probably a year and a half, and I got 20,000 followers
right.
from that. And before that, I was like, you know, I was still getting work, but it obviously just opens way more doors, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Is that thunder? Or is that a car? I was like, for a second, like, because occasionally
the you audience, worried.
Is,
I was like,
the audience is probably like, the fuck is that? Occasionally you can hear like a motorbike, or motorbikes and ambulances
right.
are the ones that you can hear.
Get a lot around
they're
here.
They're sort of very, we're near Brunton Avenue. Is it Brunton Avenue there? I just blanked on it because I've been away for so long. Yeah. Brunton Avenue near the MCG. And then, it's those high-pitched noises. And I thought for a moment, because we had like thunderstorms and lightning the other day, it just sounded like a...
You're a bit worried?
Yeah, like it just gone off and I was like,
bring the washing in, yeah? Bring the washing inside.
Laws! All right, let's get into some rapid-fire questions.
Sick.
First one for you. What does your morning routine look like?
I wake up. I have a coffee machine in my room. In my house.
Okay.
Not in my room. Make a coffee. I'll eat some fruit. I'll sit down on my computer for a couple of minutes, and then I'll try and have a quick shower and go for a walk before I do anything.
And so like my brain, your photo walk is, or your walk in the is the first thing you do?
I try and do that at least, yeah, first thing in the morning.
Okay.
Sometimes I just fail and I'll just sit there and I'll do what I need to do, my emails or whatever, but I just feel like I function way better when I do that, and I'll try and do it early.
Okay.
And I was working in nightclubs for a long time, just on the side or whatever, so my body clock was always like putting me to bed at 3 and then waking me up at, you know, 10. So
jeez.
I'm now getting up at like 7 or 8, sometimes 6, sometimes early. Depends, right? And I feel like that's actually changed my routine as well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And evening, what do you sort of do to decompress at night when you can?
Try and put the phones away, and I'll spend some time with my partner. She talks about her kids that she's been working with all day and things like that. So then it's no shop talk for me. And then when she goes to bed, I'll get on to and do some work. Uh-huh. So I actually try and edit at night. I feel like I'm better at editing at night, and I'm better at doing my work, like my emails, my sending out to clients, doing whatever I need to do during the day.
Okay.
But I split my day up like that. So I kind of wake up, do maybe 4 hours, 5 hours of work during the day. Then I'll spend time with her, and then I'll do another like four or five at night.
Do you find that there's a day during the week? I mean, I guess as a photographer, there's no defined timeline on when you work. Do you always have at least like one day a week where you take the actual day off?
I force myself to now because I feel like, especially when you work for yourself, it's very easy to not allow yourself a break because you get anxiety. And
that work creep is bad.
And you're like, oh, should I be doing this? And I've actually got to a point now where I'll force myself even to not take my film camera and go, just go and do something that doesn't involve that, because I feel like it's super important to recharge.
Yeah.
And I feel like I learned that too late. There was years, again, going back to what I was saying, how I pulled that hernia, that came from overworking myself because I didn't want to allow myself a break. And it was never that, oh, I need to make this money because I have money issues, or I need to do, there was nothing that was like, I didn't feel like I could have stopped then and done less work and I would have been fine. It was just that I didn't allow myself the time to.
Well, it's the same reason that you're doing stuff on your own and working for yourself. It's just, it's an intrinsic part of your personality. Yeah. It's something that I struggle with as well, big time.
Yeah.
And you just got to get better at,
that's it.
At managing it. Like I always try and make sure Sunday I do absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And then once a month we go down and stay with Lauren's parents on, they're sort of down Mornington Peninsula way.
Oh, I grew up in Frankston.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so their family bought a house in Dramana when Dramana wasn't cool.
Yep.
Like they probably spent like $30,000. Like this is her grandparents, and then it got handed down to her parents.
Dramana's a cool area.
It's a great area. Yeah. And so when her parents sold their house in the Bayside area, they bought a house closer to that as well. So they've got this thing that they rent out for Airbnb and this house that they live in now.
Sick.
Down near Martha Cove.
Okay, yep.
And it's just so nice to go down there.
And you I need to do it. You need to take that time to yourself.
I have to do it. I make sure that I don't take my laptop or anything unless I really, really need to.
Yep. And you need that 100%. Like, I feel like for me, I was doing Mount Dandenong. That was my my getaway spot. Like, it's like the rainforest. And now that I'm working there, I feel like I'm probably leaning towards, you know, I don't know. Like, I go to Mount Macedon or...
Mount Macedon is beautiful.
Beautiful. Or Point Leo, which is actually near
there. Yeah, it's
near
not there. Far from there.
Point Leo is like one of my favorite spots of all time.
Have you seen the new... Is it the Point Leo Estate in the Sculpture Park?
I haven't seen it because I haven't been there for a couple of years.
Okay.
Because I've been doing Mount Dandenong. But Point Leo, unbelievable. It's a good surf area.
Yeah. So we actually, when we were in Japan, we were planning on getting married over there.
Beautiful.
But we decided with the typhoon, because we were there during the typhoon, and just the logistics of it was an absolute nightmare. We just thought, why don't we just fucking get married like round the corner from Lauren's parents' house? Like,
that'd be sick.
Why make it so hard? Yeah. They've got spare rooms there. The bride and the bridesmaid can stay there.
And Japan's like naturally beautiful everywhere you go.
You know?
So it's like you could get married anywhere and it'd be fine. So.
Yeah. It was just, I just found with Japan, just the language barrier was a major issue.
Yeah.
After we went over this time, it just, planning a wedding there, I don't care enough about the wedding. I really don't. And neither does she, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Like, we don't care much for a big wedding. And I think Mornington Peninsula is such a beautiful area.
Yeah.
When you grow up sort of in the Bayside suburbs, that's your go-to place. Like, I remember so many years piling in the back of my parents' white Holden wagon.
Yeah.
Go down to Sorrento for the day. It's too expensive to stay in a motel or hotel down that area.
Just chuck up a tent.
We didn't even do that. We just drive back.
Okay. Yeah,
that's just like, fuck that. Classic Wog style. He's like, no, man, we're going to save that money. We'll just spend it on petrol and that's it.
Sick.
And we'd always drive back at like 11 or 12.
Yep.
Spend the whole day there. And I love that area.
It's amazing. I used to live obviously near the beach and stuff like that as well. So for me, I feel it's very nostalgically connected. So everything you're saying, I was like 100%, I get it.
Yeah.
I used to go sleep at the beach. So there'd be times like me and the boys would go down there and we'd just like, we'd sleep in our separate cars at the beach and then get up and go for a swim and then go to work.
The best feeling.
Such a good feeling.
My uncle used to own a place in Frankston. That was his first house. I just can't remember if it was Frankston South or I feel like he said it used to be like sort of, he managed to find like an absolute bomb of a house and sort of, you know that area that overlooks the beach part of Frankston. I think that might be it. And he managed to find like an absolute shithole and do it up. And
it's a good spot. It's funny spot. The contrast, because Frankston's a bit of a rough spot, eh?
So
the contrast between Oliver's Hill and that area and then the other part of Frankston is pretty big. So it's a good area, but
it's good.
It did have a bit of a reputation for a while.
He played footy in Mordialloc. He worked in Moorabbin. It's sort of where you hang around, I guess.
Yeah. That's a good spot.
If you had to, I guess, buy, or if you were given the opportunity to have a billboard anywhere in Australia, where would it be?
Oh, yeah.
And it could be one of these digital billboards as well. So I'm not biased to it just being print, but it's got to be somewhere in Melbourne, ideally.
Mm-hmm.
And what would you put on it?
That's a good question. I can tell you what I'd put on it first, if you like. I'd put a really basic photo, probably like a film pic, and just a QR code. And that QR code would go towards some project that I've got going on. You know what I mean? So I feel like the people's natural, curiosity would take the right people to there. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I feel like sometimes being super basic kind of has people going, like, what the fuck is that? All right, let's have a look, you know? And everyone knows how to use QR codes now, I'm sure. You put your iPhone up to it and it'll just do it by itself now. So, and I do, like, I've got one photo that I go to for all my advertising. It's like this photo of, it's like a really misty road that I use for everything. So, if I linked it to you, like, I'd seen that. So I've used it on a lot of my ads and things like that as well. And so I'll probably use that. And man, I don't know, probably somewhere in the city. Because I feel like having something from the forest in the city would be such a culture shock that people are like, I wonder what that is.
There's a few good spots now in the city. Like, everyone talks about the cliche Punt Road spot, but I'm starting to, there's a new one, there's a wraparound on the corner of Flinders Street and Swanston.
Right.
Do you know the one above the Young and Jackson? It's sort of like a wraparound electric.
Electric one. Yeah, I've seen that.
And then there's another one just down near Elizabeth. And then, of course, the one at Melbourne Airport is the classic. Like, that's
a nice
billboard now.
Yeah. I think that would probably be my go-to, I reckon, though. I reckon the wraparound one that you're saying, I think I know exactly which one you're talking about. It's probably the most central one. I'd go there. Or I'd just project it somewhere. You know, just project just it on something. Just put it on a random wall.
Flinders Lane, there's been plenty that do that.
Yeah. But I feel like having something that's going to be super simple, like if you overcomplicate it, people just go, all right, on to the next thing. Like we got to a point now, I feel like, with people, they're just like, if too much information, they just freak out. They're like, I haven't got time for this. Even if they do. So if you just put something super simple where they're like, what's that? Cool, done. And they can move on with their day. That's enough brand awareness, right? So.
All right. Last question for you.
Cool.
And I'm thinking very carefully about this. Like, what is the question I want to ask? But I feel like, what is your best purchase been under $200?
That film camera.
Yeah.
$150. And you know how much they're worth now? Probably, I looked online, they were at $7,800.
Jesus.
Yeah. And that's been probably my breadwinner and my biggest inspiration for the past 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So probably that. Next after that, I have like, everyone talks about it, so I'm just going to bring it up. I love wearing black beanies. I just like, everyone's like, why are you always wearing the same beanie? But I bought like a whole bunch of the same black beanie for like $15.
Where was that from? Do you remember?
I can't remember. Honestly, it was probably like a Cotton On or something years ago.
Yeah.
But I wear black beanies everywhere.
I know the beanie and I feel like it looks like it's from like Plane or something
like
that. It's
like some what's it called? Like some sailor's beanie or something that. Yeah. I don't know. I liked it like years ago and I just haven't taken it off since.
I can't pull off beanies, man. Yeah. I really, really can't. Apparently I've got too much of a long head.
A long head?
Not a long head, but like, I don't know. I just find that it doesn't, maybe if I shave my head, it would look all right.
Maybe. But it depends. Like, I tried snapbacks for a while and I looked like the LD version of Mark Wahlberg. And I was like, I don't want to look like that guy. So I couldn't do that anymore. So
that's a good one.
Yeah.
I like that.
The LD Mark Wahlberg.
The version of Mark Wahlberg. Yeah.
So I looked like that dude for a while.
All right. Look, mate, Josh, thank you so much for coming in.
Champion, thank you for having me.
Where can people find you on the interwebs? Where are the best places?
The best place to see my work is probably on my Instagram, which is at the.cwolf. That's it.
Josh, thanks Legend. For coming in, mate.
Champion. Thank Cheers. You for having me.
Thanks, You're the coming.
Man. Sorry, Mike. There you go.
Thanks, mate.
Legend.
Thank you for making it to the end. Before you run off, subscribe if you enjoyed this episode or do leave us a rating. For Instagram, go follow us on @uncommon_podcast. For YouTube, search Uncommon Podcast and don't forget to subscribe if you're watching this video. Also give us a like or leave a comment on what you thought about the episode. But until next time, thanks so much for listening. This podcast is brought to you by Neural Media. Are you an entrepreneur or marketer who needs help making podcasts, video, or animation? Perhaps you don't have time to manage a freelancer or the budget to deal with an agency. Well, Neural Media can help you with simple and affordable content creation, saving you time and money by taking away the pain of producing that content. To learn more, head to neural.com/media. That's neural.com/media, play around with our pricing or request a callback directly. Listeners to the show receive a special discount by using the promo code UNCOMMON.